Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, thank you, Carol. Welcome back. It's 3:05, and we've got a lot to get to, including an audio cut of the day this hour. This amazing wager by former State Senator Jeff Smith about the election. Details on that came out today. It's actually a chance, I guess, he had. He's going to tell the story in a few minutes, to win $2 million. He had to spend $100,000 to win $2 million. He would have won it because Joe Biden is president today. But this bet was offered after the election, so it's kind of an interesting story. We'll talk about that. Dave, do you have a browser handy there in the CamoX studio?
Of course I do. You know that. Yeah.
By the way, you know I came in on Monday because of the holiday and you and Fred were out, and I was trying to save the new producer's life, Lori, because she had never worked with me.
How about Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
Yeah. So I had not used any of our computers in that building.
How'd you like the speed of these lovely machines here?
I remember when I signed up for AOL back in 1997, and I was trying to figure out how the internet worked. You know, you used to get these messages of, what was it, like 15,000, it wasn't like bits per minute, or it was something like that,
right?
Megabytes per second or something. That's kind of how it felt. So hopefully, what do we not have Wi-Fi in that building anymore, or what's going on?
We do. It's hit or miss. Yeah.
All right. But let's say that it's going to work right now. What I need you to do, open up that browser.
I'm
clear
ready.
The top of the browser. Okay. I want you to type in Antifa.com and tell me what happens. Someone's going to need to explain this to me. Type in Antifa.com.
Wait a minute. This goes to this goes to the White House website?
Well, explain to people what happens when you do that.
So you type in
Cheryl
Antifa.
Atkinson tweet.
Wow.
Right. Cheryl Atkinson tweeted this out and said, what happened is that whoever had that domain decided to redirect. So that's where it's going to be. But that's maybe something that's sort of interesting, isn't it?
That's wow. That's brilliant in a way.
I guess so. I don't know. I think it's a little weird. All right. Let me, I want to do this Tom Bevin story because I didn't see this on Monday. Monday, of course, was MLK Day. And Stevie Wonder, love Stevie Wonder. Man, I've never seen Stevie Wonder in concert. He would be the top of the bucket list for sure of artists I have never seen. He's calling on Joe Biden to launch something called a Truth Commission to examine racial injustice. He called this an open letter to Dr. King. He released it on MLK Day, and he talked about he was physically sick by the lack of progress, calling on Joe Biden and Vice President Harris to launch a formal governmental investigation to establish the truth of inequality in this country. He said, this truth will validate the history, and this commission will recommend reconciliations. I love Stevie Wonder, but I'm not real comfortable with that letter for a variety of reasons. And Tom Bevin really summed it up. He's one of the founders of Real Clear Politics. I lamented the fact that it's hard to find good news and information. My recommendation, I guess I should have said this in the last hour, is use realclearpolitics.com. Because whether you're on the right, you're on the left, you're in the middle, there's no fringy, crazy stuff up there. So you might have to turn somewhere else if you're fringy and crazy. But they have it's a compendium of all kinds of opinion pieces and news from all over. And they also break it down into Real Clear Science and Real Clear Sports. So it really is a great, great site. But Tom is one of the founders, and he wrote an open letter to Stevie Wonder, which I thought was great. And I think that this is something, I know this is something that I've said and something that's frustrated me in the aftermath of Mike Brown. Because time and time again, we heard this country has made no progress. And I reject that firmly. And so does Tom Bevin. And let's offer some advice here, or not advice, but some evidence of this. So Tom wrote this letter to Stevie Wonder. Dear Stevie, we've never met, like untold millions of people around the world. I'm a huge fan. I can still remember flipping through my father's vinyl albums as a boy and stumbling across Songs in the Key of Life. Your music continues to bring tremendous joy to people in all walks of life. So thank you. But I have one bone to pick. Earlier this week, you wrote an open letter to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., published on the holiday that now bears his name, in which you said, "It is painful to know that the needle has not moved one iota. For 36 years, we've had a national holiday honoring your birthday and principles, yet you would not believe the lack of progress. It makes me physically sick." Now, Tom's going to address this much more eloquently than me, but that's just complete nonsense. That is the definition of fake news, and it should be rejected, and it should be discussed, and it should be challenged. So what Mr. Bevin wrote is, no sensible person, I would be in that category, I believe, would argue that we've eradicated racism in America. That would be foolish and untrue. But equally foolish and untrue is the claim that we haven't made any racial progress in the last 36 years in this country, not one iota. That's ridiculous. Today's a great example of it, right? 3.5 decades. Let's see. Let's kind of take a look here. In 2008, this country elected, and in 2012, they reelected the nation's first African-American president. A couple of months ago, a majority of Americans voted for a woman whose immigrant parents grew up on opposite sides of the globe under British rule. And she just took the oath of office for vice president. 2 weeks ago, the state of Georgia, that's in the South, sent a black man to the United States Senate. Raphael Warnock is actually a pastor at Dr. King's church. I'm thinking that Dr. King would have considered that progress, right? In 2013, Tim Scott was appointed to fill Strom Thurmond's old Senate seat. The following year, Senator Scott won election. And by the way, not only did he win election, having become the first African-American senator elected from the Deep South since Reconstruction, he won more than 60% of the vote. And by the way, his name is being tossed around as future stars in the Republican Party, maybe a presidential candidate. From 2001 to 2005, Colin Powell served as the first African-American Secretary of State. He was succeeded by Condoleezza Rice, first African-American Secretary of State. Michelle Obama has held the title of the most admired woman in America for 3 years in a row. Oprah Winfrey has been on that list for 33 consecutive years. 2 decades ago, Robert Johnson, the CEO of Black Entertainment Television, became the first black billionaire. And as Tom points out, the list goes on and on. And that doesn't suggest everyday racism has been eradicated. It hasn't. We see horrifying examples, shameful examples of this. But that doesn't mean we haven't made progress. We've made a lot of progress. A lot of progress. Despite the passions, though, of the moment, here's what Tom wrote, to deny that any racial progress has been made in America is inaccurate and self-defeating. This is where the media plays a role, right? Maybe we should have stories on CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times that challenge false assertions like this. Or maybe print opposite opinions like Tom Bevin's in the editorial pages. In 1963, 2 years before I was born, Dr. King gave his speech on the National Mall. 18 young black men, all men, 18, were in Harvard University's graduating class. 10 months ago, Harvard announced that 300 students in the 2024 class are black, 15% of the school's freshmen. The share of blacks with college degrees, a key indicator of future economic success, more than doubled between 1990 and 2020. I'm sorry, 2020. That's the same thing. I think I just said the same thing, didn't I? It's so weird. The 2000s are so weird. More than 61% of black people in this country are now middle class. those are historic highs. They really are. To pretend, and this is what I think happened, and in fact, I know it happened. A lot of you commented on this in the aftermath of what happened in Ferguson and the false narrative. To pretend that none of this is happening, which is what, unfortunately, many leaders, politicians want to do, and apparently Stevie Wonder, is to completely, it's lie. I mean, if you want to lie like Donald Trump did, you know, and claim that you're telling the truth, you're not. We've made tremendous gains. And this is counterproductive. It has been counterproductive since Ferguson. It's not going to help future progress. It's not going to, it's setting us back. We know that. I think what happened over the summer has set us back with George Floyd, and we're not moving forward, unfortunately. And we're certainly not going to move forward if you have people writing open letters from the world of entertainment saying we have not made one iota of progress. Dave, let me see if I can get this caller in here from Feinbaum's show, okay? Now, this was something I was going to play this yesterday, and this is in Dave, do you remember when this call took place? Paul Feinbaum's a guy on the SEC Network, does a talk show, and he had a caller, and this was an amazing story, so I want to get in here. Do you know when this took place?
It's been at least a few years, and then they replay this every Luther King Day.
And they should. I had never heard this before. This is great. So the caller calls in. Listen to this story. It's amazing. This is progress.
I grew up in Alabama. And I was raised as a racist.
Were you?
And I was very proud of it. My father was in the KKK. All my uncles were. But in 1967, I joined the Marine Corps. I considered myself strong, brave, and stupid, so I wanted to go to Vietnam. Hmm. And I got my wish. First day there, I met probably the most militant acting and talking black person that was ever on the face of the earth. Less than an hour after we met, we tried to kill each other. And we tried to kill each other for the next couple of weeks, about every day, till our gunny sergeant took us aside and said, next time that happens, you're going home on a bad conduct discharge. So we put aside our differences and turned out to be fair soldiers. We still had strong animosity. And for the next 2 years, he saved my life a couple of times. I saved his a couple of times.
All right. So that's just the part of it. That in and of itself is fascinating and really a great caller and an amazing story. But what happens next, as Paul Harvey would say, is really interesting too. The rest of the story.
Neither one of us want to leave Vietnam. We spent 22 of the 24 months, between 67 and 69, there. Too much we were being treated in the Philippines, but in 69 we both had to leave, and I moved back to Alabama and went to school. He moved back to Detroit and resumed his ways. After I got out of college, as dumb as I was, I managed to get an engineering degree, and I talked to him a few times over those years. We had become I guess you could call friends, and he was not having it too good in Detroit, and I said, well, come on down here, and you can go to work for the same company I am. So he did, and he wound up working for me.
Wow.
He decided he'd go to school and get his degree, which he did, and he decided he wanted to outdo me, which he always did. He went on and got his master's degree, and I wound up working for him.
All right, and I think there's one more, Dave, there's one more here, right?
Because that's correct, yeah.
There was kind of an amazing, that I again, so that's the second part's amazing too, but then listen to the third part here.
And 32 years ago, come April 3rd of this year, Paul, I will have been married to his sister for 32 years.
Wow.
We both had
so now you're working for her.
Yeah, he was the best man at my wedding.
That's incredible. That's an incredible story.
We had two sons apiece, all four of them graduated from University of Alabama. And
anybody ever tell you this would be a good book?
Yeah, probably would be. Nobody believe it.
this would be a great book and movie.
We've had a good life, and he lives about three houses down now, and we still try to lie as much as we can about our war exploits. But it just goes to prove, Paul, that anything can happen to a former racist. You never know.
Are there still racist pieces of human debris in this country? Of course there are. Okay, you're not going to eradicate all of it, but to deny that there has been progress every decade since that speech, every decade, except maybe the last, okay? I might give you the last or the last 6 years. I'm going to give you that. There has not been progress, and I think we know why. It's 319 at KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on KMOX.
Saw this morning in the Missouri Independent. Someone had, maybe it was my next guest who tweeted out, maybe it was someone else, because then I retweeted it. Smith, was it you that actually tweeted this out at first? Former Senator Jeff Smith with us this afternoon. How did I see this originally? Was it you? It probably was you, because it was your wager.
It was my wager. And and I wrote the piece in the Independent.
So, is this real? It's a great bet. It's a great story. You're telling me, and I want you to explain this to my audience, what happened here. But first and foremost, this is not fake news.
So here's what happened. And thanks for having me, Mark, and good to talk to you.
But so I'm trying to determine if you're satirically trying to break something down or this really happened. So go ahead.
No. All this really happened. Swear to God,
okay,
on my two kids' lives, okay?
Well, people will understand my question, I think, when they hear you describe this. Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, so, you know, I've been like a lifelong poker player, right? So, and one of my best friends in the world was a professional poker player for like 15 years, and, you know, high stakes player, got to know a lot of people in that world. And one guy who he knew was a Republican, you know, high stakes gambler, and was looking for someone about a month ago to make a bet on the election a month after the election was over, but he believed that Trump was going to get sworn in today. And he still believed this after the Electoral College vote was certified.
Right.
So he was looking for someone.
Oh, wait. All right. Wait. So I want to be clear on that. So it wasn't only this is where it gets fascinating. This bet wasn't only based on because the election happened in November and then you have everything that happened in November and December. This was after certification.
This was like December 15th or 16th or so. It was right after certification.
Okay.
He wanted to put up $100,000 of his money, and he wanted 20-1 odds, which meant that I needed to put together $2 million. And basically, if Trump would be sworn in, then he would get $2 million. And if Biden were sworn in, then I'd get his $100,000. So that was the context of the bet. And since the Electoral College vote had already been certified, to me it felt like, you know, a no-brainer. Like, you know, they say there's no such thing as a free lunch, but I thought to myself, this is as close as we're ever going to get, right? $100,000, but I got to figure out a way to put together $2 million.
And you said that the funds would be held in escrow for a month at a law firm, you know, upon which both parties agreed. And you wrote, it felt like free money to me. And here's what Jeff wrote. I'm a former political scientist with a background in campaigns, elections. Given all the evidence, free Trump legal filings, I saw no plausible scenario under which the outcome would change. All right, so then pick it up there. You're still trying to find money.
So then, you know, I'm a quarter of the way there. I got $500,000. And then I'm making calls to former donors of mine from when I was in the Senate and you know, kind of liberal friends. And they're saying the same thing over and over, which is like, well, no way. Like, Trump's not going to leave. He's never going to leave. I'm not doing that. And I'm like, look, he's going to have to leave. You know, after January 6th, things are going to be different. And my friends, most of them just said some version of, I can't trust him. And the process is, you know, everything is different. He's breaking all the norms. And in fact, the first person I called misunderstood the bet and thought that he would win, that my side would win $2 million and only had to put up $100,000. And he still
didn't want it.
He still didn't want the bet, even after the Electoral College had certified. So I'm thinking to myself, wow, like Trump's and MAGA craziness, you know, Trump has like, he's actually kind of like, and I wrote this, and I don't mean it in a disparaging way, but he's almost like broken the brains of people on the left who aren't thinking straight. And so I'm just thinking, what is wrong with these people? Everything's going to end up fine. And then, of course, January 6th happens. And watching that day, the Capitol be overrun, humbled me really, because, and I think probably a lot of people, because it made me realize that the way that I had kind of glibly dismissed all these people's fears, a lot of their fears were actually coming to fruition that day as we watched the rioting in the Capitol.
But your takeaway here is similar to some observations that I've made over the past couple of months, just from a very different perspective, because we come from different perspectives politically. But you said in the people that you were reaching out to, these were all progressives, right? They're not folks on my side.
For, but and then I actually ended up calling, I got so desperate, I called a couple of Republicans. And I called one close friend who's a Republican strategist, and I said, hey, man, look, can we, you know, what are the odds that Trump is going to somehow win this thing and be sworn in? And he texts back, zero. And I said, okay, I'd like to invest in this, you know, business deal that, you know, this bet that I've got going. And he basically said, you know, thanks, appreciate you thinking of me, but I got to take a pass. Presumably realizing that if it ever came back that he was making money betting against Trump, it could hurt his career as a strategist. I don't know.
Wow. That is so the takeaway part, though, you said these are all very intelligent, successful business people and lawyers who are so traumatized by the last 4 years of norm breaking that they've completely given up on our democracy's guardrails and our capacity to self-correct. All right. So that's your takeaway. Jeff wrote that. I have experienced some of the same misgivings sort of from a different perspective with intelligent, successful business people, lawyers, people. I'm not going to say they were traumatized, but they're. I don't know where they are right now because some of the reactions from the past couple of months have absolutely shocked me.
The fact that on which side? You talking about the right or the left?
The right.
Right. Okay.
In other words, people, I guess maybe I'm not making it. In other words, people believing to the very end. Your people were wondering to the very end. They were like, I don't, you know. Some people that I know were believing to the very end that that, in fact, would happen.
Have you been on Facebook yesterday? I tried to make another bet with a high school friend of mine was saying on Facebook yesterday that, you know, they were going to storm the Capitol. And, you know, he was completely convinced yesterday. He made a $100 bet with somebody else saying, hey, look, like, I'm completely confident. I've been told, I have it on good information. Here's how it's going to go down tomorrow. I mean, he bet someone else $100. And so even money. And so I came in and said, you know, basically, hey, could I get the same bet? And he said, well, I don't know if I want to bet anymore because this is democracy. I said, well, what if I give you 25-1 odds? And then he didn't respond to that. But the point is that a lot of people that we know in our lives, whether fear on the left or complete confidence on the right. Some have been very relieved today on my side. On the right, there is fury. If I've been looking at some of these message boards on other places, the QAnon people, they can't believe. They feel like they were taken for a ride.
Yeah,
they're furious.
I know.
Where's the spaceship, Mark? The spaceship was supposed
I've seen some of the messages. You're right. They are. And you knew it was going to happen because I've been getting these messages from people and I've had the same question. What's going to happen Wednesday when they realize that Trump is gone? Jeff Smith, here's another takeaway from all this. I'm a poker player, too. So that's good information. We'll have to throw down on the table sometime soon. How's that sound?
It sounds great. I'll text you about it.
Even a better poker player, my wife. So, man, I used to have tournaments back in the day. Used to love holding them. Just can't find the time these days. 3:29 at KMOX. Carol has the news. When we come back, I want to kind of get back into the COVID world right now. We had a great conversation with Dr. Randa Williams earlier this afternoon from the Missouri Department of Health on the state of the vaccine. You can use the radio.com rewind function and go back to 2:20 or check out the podcast and find out a little bit more about what he's saying with the vaccine. However, coming up next, we're going to talk about the origins of COVID. CNET did a real interesting piece in how this all kind of busted out in China, and some of the new details are fascinating. We'll get to that after the news, and here's Carol.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah. Dave Klein pulling out a little Stevie Ray Vaughan. I like that. 3:36. I miss my bumper songs. I was in the studio on Monday and got to play my old bumper music, and I do miss that. All right, Klein, this is heading in the right direction, though, with Stevie Ray Vaughan. So I give my stamp of approval. We have an audio cut of the day before the end of the hour. I saw this story that was in CNET just a couple of days ago, might have even been yesterday, about the origins of COVID and the lab leak theory. And Ian Scherer, our good friend from CNET is with me this afternoon. How are you, Ian? This is kind of weird, fascinating, scary all at the same time, right?
Yes, I think that is the way to describe it. You know, the debate about how the coronavirus started has been a really fascinating one, in part because it's such a mystery. You know, there's two very interesting conflicting theories, one being that it was just an unlucky happenstance that that happened in a wet food market, as we've talked about many times before. And then there's also the theory that it might have been the result of a laboratory accident. And what's really interesting, and what I think we did an amazing job at CNET going through those two, is talking about previous efforts to identify coronaviruses, because there have been SARS-like viruses in China before, through laboratory experiments, but then also laboratory research, rather, not experiments, and then also how these things have actually infected humans out in the wild. And it leads us to the end result, which is it's hard to tell. We are trying to figure it out, but it's really fascinating how we figure these things out.
Yeah, so the story that, and I think the reporter's name was Jackson Ryan yesterday on CNET, saying, look, scientists consider natural origin to be the most likely starting point, but we've had enough evidence, maybe some circumstantial, to say that the lab leak theory is worth looking at, and it's increasingly difficult to ignore, right?
Yes, and I think what's important is that before, you know, if I think back a year ago, the lab leak theory was very different from what we are talking about now. Back, a year ago, it was conspiracy theories that this was some sort of a biological weapon that got out of control or that was intentionally released. Neither of those appear to be true. What's very much more likely about this lab leak theory is that there have been a lot of researchers who have actually gone into bat caves, collected a lot of samples that could include a virus that could jump to humans, tried to research it to try and figure out, A, what exists, but also, B, how to fight it, and that somehow in the process someone got sick and it got out into the real world. And either one is incredibly sad, right? But it'll help us, I think, in the future if we're able to identify where it came from, because if it did come from a lab, then we need to figure out how to make sure that doesn't happen again. And if it didn't, then we need to find other ways to protect ourselves in the wild, too.
Can we actually, do you think we'll actually be able to find some of this out? Let me start with one of the theories here that's written about this. This is a great story. It's very detailed, so it's hard to sort of cull it down here in a short radio segment.
Yeah,
but I
remember
when I was...
He's a great writer, though.
And I appreciate that. But, you know, when this all started and we were trying to figure some of it out and you had some information that was leaking, I remember bats were mentioned, but also this anteater thing. It was like, I think it's called a pangolin, right? So has that now, according to this research, that's sort of been debunked? We don't think it was the anteater thing that passed it to the bats, or however that theory worked?
Yeah, I mean, essentially what they end up doing is that they go through a bunch of the genetic sequencing of all of these animals, right? And this is what it all comes down to, is genetic sequencing. And this is kind of, you know, if you think about the Law and Order stuff, right, where they get the fingerprints and all of that and they try and figure it out. Well, the genetic sequencing on the virus is very similar to that. And what they basically said is that even though there was a theory at one point that the pangolin, which is one of the most trafficked animals in the world and something that people do eat, that it might be responsible, it turns out that it's not, right? And that's mostly due to the results of that research.
So, and I kind of cut short my other part of that question, which is, how do we know if we're actually asking the right questions or really getting the right answers is probably the more appropriate way to phrase that, because there was conspiracy, there are mysteries, you're dealing with China, all these things. Can you ever really find the answers?
Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of answers to that question, you know, and a lot of it kind of intersects with politics, right? Because there's obviously the Chinese government, which does not like to be embarrassed and is not known for its transparency. There is also international cooperation questions, right? There's questions of investment in research and and understanding these things when we're not in the middle of a pandemic so we can identify it at the right time. Because at the end of the day, we don't, you know, I could care less what the history of this virus is. I want to know how to stop the next one. And that is right. Why the history of this is so important, right? Is that we don't want to research it just for fun. We want to stop the next one. And we need to make sure that we invest enough and put enough effort in, even now and in the future, to make sure that we know those things. And I think that's how we get those answers. But you're right. It's hard to identify what the right answers are or what the right questions are. And, you know, epidemiology has been something that's evaded us for thousands of years. We've only recently really understood it.
So the other thing that makes it very tricky is, and this is, I think, explained very well in the piece, is you have the legitimate things that have happened, but then you have people that say, well, look, it was created in this lab as a bioweapon, right? Now, that's been refuted, but here's the line from the story in the paragraph, which I think is spot on. There are conspiracies, but some arguments against an accidental leak have unfairly mixed the conspiracies with legitimate lines of inquiry. An accidental leak should be given equal weight when there's no clear evidence against it. Yet the mess of adjacent conspiracies has seen most scientists shy away from the topic altogether, which is part of the problem, I think. And that's why I think this is a pretty good, you know, piece of journalism here that you guys did, because it's a pretty even-handed coverage of all this mess in some of the questions. It addresses the conspiracies, but also says, look, you kind of got to focus on what the facts are right now, or at least what we know.
Right. And I think what's important to keep in mind is that, you know, a lot of what the coronavirus has taught us is when politics intersects, it gets really messy. And I think one of the things that Jackson did a great job in his writing about is how do we separate the politics from the science? And how do we kind of look at what could science tell us versus assuming that there are these grand conspiracies to hurt everyone. And I think that's what's really valuable about what that story tries to walk through. And, you know, if it is a lab problem, then I want to know that so we can stop it in the future. But all of this politics has made everyone very worried about what the implications of things are, and that makes it worse in the end because we may not find out because people are worried about possibly playing into some bad politics.
Well, and I think that no matter what happens, you could have maybe even definitive proof that comes up, and we've learned that half people won't even believe it anyway. So that complicates
it even
more.
That's a huge problem as well. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I don't know where that kind of takes us, but we even heard, maybe I saw this over the holidays, Ian, you might have seen this too last month, there was a WHO story that cleared in the last month or so where someone was quoted as saying, COVID, this is not the big one. The big one's still coming at some point. And that's sort of what the point of all this is, that, you know, in the story it says we can't rely on luck to prevent the emergence of the next virus. We've got to figure this one out. Maybe that's going to help us with preventing or making the next one not explode into a pandemic.
Yes, and that's why this research is so important. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I remember a year ago when this talk about labs came out, people said, why are they even keeping these things in labs? And all of this is around trying to make sure that we are all safe. We don't want another bubonic plague. You know, as horrible as this coronavirus has been, it is a blip in the history of the massive, massive deaths that have happened around disease. And we absolutely don't want to recreate that problem or allow it to happen. And it can happen naturally. So this is a really fascinating point in our lives, I think. And what I hope comes out of it personally is a huge investment in research and in science inquiry to make sure that we are protected in the future. Because if this something, as I mentioned, is such a blip and can really upend so many lives, what would it mean if it was even just slightly worse?
You know what we're really good at, though, in this country? Is we don't learn those lessons, right? We, by the way, this happened to us. This happened once before. You know, it happened in 1918.
Yeah.
In 1917, sorry, I saw the president gets confused on that too, and I think I reverted back to the former president.
No, it happened over a couple of years, so you're not wrong.
Yeah, but no, but the point is that it's amazing, you know, in that book by John Barry, the similarities from back then and what's happening right now, even in here, you know, St. Louis actually took more of a lead back then with mask wearing and restrictions and things along those lines. But there were cautionary tales that existed clearly for decades, and it was George W. Bush who, I think, read that Berry book and sort of put it on the table as something that should be addressed. But, you know, until we have a crisis, and that's sort of, it's sort of human nature. I'm not giving it an excuse, but that's what we do best. Look at 9/11, right?
Well, and one of my favorite lines, I think it came from Churchill, is that you can trust Americans to do the right thing after they've tried everything else first.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly on point. Ian Scher from CNN. Always great to have you on. Thanks, Ian. Fascinating article. We'll put it up on the Twitter and the Facebook page as well. It's 3:46. We'll come back here. Roger has traffic this afternoon. We still have an audio cut of the day. Big wrap-up of all the inauguration ceremonies. Carol has that. We have, of course, Total Information PM coming up here at 4 o'clock. And I do want to play back a short portion of the Randall Williams interview from earlier this afternoon. He's the head of the Missouri Health Department. We'll do that in our PM political roundup coming up at 4:50. Oh, and I think this is fun, too. We mentioned this in passing yesterday, that the Cardinals are offering a chance to take batting practice on the field at Busch Stadium. And my friend Aaliyah Likas is going to join us at 4:20 to explain the fans at bat experience. Roger, coming up next on KMOX.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget, in with the new, out with the old. First, the new Joe Biden taking the oath of office today and giving a speech.
And so today, at this time, in this place, let's start afresh, all of us. Let's begin to listen to one another again, hear one another, see one another, show respect to one another. Politics doesn't have to be a raging fire, destroying everything in its path. Every disagreement doesn't have to be a cause for total war. And we must reject the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured.
Before that speech, the former president took off on Air Force One, heading to Florida, and his final words.
A goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form. And again, I want to just in leaving, I want to thank our Vice President, Mike Pence, and Karen. I want to thank Congress because we really worked well with Congress, at least certain elements of Congress. But we really did. We've gotten so much done that nobody thought would be possible. But I do want to thank Congress. And I want to thank all of the great people of Washington, D.C., all of the people that we worked with to put this miracle together. So have a good life. We will see you soon. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Have a good life. We will see you soon. The president leaving office, taking off on Air Force One. And this was the song that played in the background as he left. And the QAnon folks are still trying to figure it out because they're not exactly sure why. He's still not in office and martial law wasn't declared and all that other stuff. Very confusing on the message boards today. That's your audio cut of the day. Or your audio daily double on KMOX Total Information PM is coming up next.
Much more than this, I did it my
your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.